Well, good morning, good afternoon, good night. Welcome back to those of you who were here yesterday. For those of you who missed us yesterday, we missed
you. Thank
you.
Yes, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us this morning. This is day two of Introduction to Programming with Python. That is Susan Ibach. I am Christopher Harrison. And what we want to do is sort of reset the level, of, as it were, that we want to go back, yep. introduce ourselves, because we know we've got a fair number of people that are kind of just joining us, you know, kind of yep. brand new, don't know our quirky sense of humor. Our little quirky brand of delivery here. So we want to make sure that we introduce ourselves. We want to talk about what it is that we're going to talk about, and then kind of launch on into it, because we certainly have a fair amount of content to try and
great content and get to get through today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Susan, right along those lines, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
So my name is Susan Ibach, and I'm a technical evangelist based out of Microsoft Canada. My Twitter handle is HockeyGeekGirl, and I've been programming for a number of years. I'm not going to admit to exactly how many years of coding experience, but as I was making the joke yesterday, it's remarkable how many years experience I have, given that I'm only 29.
Only 29?
Yeah, I'm celebrating my several anniversaries of that 29th birthday now.
won't ask how many.
And so I spent a lot of time coding. I love exploring the world of code and having fun with it, and looking forward to sharing it with you guys today, and hoping that you guys will have some fun with it too.
Yeah, excellent. I'm, of course, Christopher Harrison. My Twitter handle is GeekTrainer, which really kind of tells you everything about my professional career that you might ever need to know on a personal basis. I started off with the Commodore 64, picked up my copy of Byte magazine, punched in the programs from there.
I remember getting those books and typing in the programs in the books. Yes, that's how we started. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and, you know, it is those little things, just getting in there, kind of breaking things. That really is the way that that you want to learn to do code. On a personal basis, I have a four-legged child and a periodic marathoner when I'm not, you know, battling yet another injury. I would also like to point out, since this is day two, Susan and I both decided to get a little bit more casual this
morning. We're more coder garb today. This is
exactly.
more what you wear
this
when you're coding. Get comfortable, settle in, and start coding. So that's just it. Now we're really ready to settle in and do some coding.
Exactly. Now, real quick, if you take a look at the slide, you're going to notice this was everything from day one.
Which will all, it was all recorded and it will all be posted and available in a couple of weeks.
You'll get an email
and notification when the recording's available. So if you missed any of the content yesterday, yes, you'll have a chance to go back, look at that. And we have this awesome, on GitHub, we also have available the slide decks, the demos we've done in terms of the code. We have challenges for you at the end of each module. The challenges are on that GitHub location, and even the solutions to the challenges, which you can use if you need a little help.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, that bottom code right there, that's going to get you to everything that Susan was just talking about, all those little sample files. And one of the things that you're going to notice is we'll do our demos live, which of course means things will break.
Yep.
That's what happened. But we will be putting everything up onto that GitHub location, and you can access that with the bottom URL. This top URL, the reason that I threw that back up there, is that's the shortcut URL that you can use to get to the presentation today. But what's cool about that shortcut is that once all of this becomes available on demand, which will be in about 2 weeks, that URL will be updated. So you will get the email, and that's really the best way to know that now all of this is live. So you'll get that email, but if you maybe lost your email, or if maybe the email that the site has for you is different than the one that you usually use, you can go ahead and use that URL. And that's always the one that I point people at.
So that works for the live event, and it will also get you access to the recordings once those are available.
Exactly.
So one URL for live, or just to watch us over and over again.
That's exactly it.
all joking aside, actually, when you're trying to learn how to code, there'll be times when you're watching us do a demo, and you know, there's times when you'll be coding along, and times when you're going, oh no, I just have to pay attention now. And you'll be going, oh, yep. I wish I could just rewind and watch that over, or pause it here while I try something. So I do recommend, in a couple of weeks when you've been playing for a bit, go back to some of the chapters that maybe you were struggling with and review them and stop and pause and try things out, because that you'll find that really useful as you're trying to master coding.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Practice, practice, practice.
There you go. All right. Now, as far as our day two topics today, day two topics today, this is what we're going to be talking about, which is starting off with two modules on loops.
Yep.
So we'll start off with for loops, and Susan will draw cool little things on her screen. will then go into while loops, and I probably won't draw a whole lot of cool things on my screen, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. We'll then get into lists, multiple items of information. We'll take a look at both writing, reading files. We'll take a look at functions, which is going to help simplify your code, make your code more reusable, and finish it all out with error handling. Which one big thing that we want to kind of highlight here is our target audience and who you are. Now, one of the things that you're going to notice about yesterday, one of the things that you're going to notice about today, is we make no assumptions as to programming level. Yep. So that we spent a fair amount of time yesterday, for example, talking about the basics of what a variable is, not just simply how to declare it. So if you're relatively new to development and just trying to check this Python thing out, or really just trying to check programming out in general, you're in the right spot. Now, we are going to build on the concepts from yesterday, so I would definitely count yesterday as sort of a prerequisite to today, or the knowledge anyway from there. But even if you didn't watch yesterday and you're still brand new to programming, you're probably still going to pick up a few little things.
I think you'll be able to follow what we're doing today, even if you missed yesterday. There might be a couple of things that you want to go back and check up on later or read up on later or check out in the recordings afterwards. But I think you'll still be able to get a lot of value out of the content today, even if you weren't able to attend yesterday. And that's it. We're not expecting you to come with coding experience. If you have never written a line of code in your life, this is still the right place for you to be to learn how to code. And the language we'll be using as we teach you to code is Python.
Yep. Absolutely. That's it. And that really is the key. We're teaching you to code. We happen to be using Python.
Yeah.
Yep. That's really it. Last but not least, the MVA community. 2 million people in the MVA community. You can earn points for attending this little MVA. 50 MVA points. You'll notice the shortcut URL. You'll notice the code down at the very bottom. There is not a new code for today, so there's not a bonus 50 for attending the second day.
Bonus if you get to hear more of Christopher's jokes.
And more hockey references.
Yes. More free toasters.
Yes.
If you were here yesterday, you'll get the free toasters.
Exactly, yeah. And anyway, no spaghetti. That's a different reference.
Yes, I know that reference.
You do know
on,
that reference.
Move on.
But anyway, yes, moving on. So what you're going to notice is the fact that you can go get the 50 points if today is your first day. There's the URL, and then away you go from there, which actually is away you go.
Ah, so now we're done with our introduction and ready to start digging into some new code.
Exactly.
For today.
Let's do some code.
So let's jump into and talk a bit about repeating events. You know, there are times, yesterday we talked about how the reason we get into coding is because we want to solve problems. And what we do when we're coding a program is really we're solving a problem by writing code. We're getting the computer to solve a problem for us. That's why we write code.
We had this conversation last night about kind of math and programming, and that was the biggest point that Susan made last night. So it's awesome to hear you making that again this morning, that's what you're doing with code. You're problem solving.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Code programs are there to solve problems for us.
Yes.
So as we learn more commands, we can solve bigger problems, more complex problems with our code. And some of the problems that we have to solve involve repetitive actions, things you have to do over and over again. A simple example, you are having a party and you have people coming over. You want to pour a cup of coffee for each guest, right? It's not just pour yourself a cup of coffee. It's like, oh, wait, I've got people at the table. I'm going to pour everyone a cup of coffee.
Exactly.
Wash the dishes until they're all clean. You don't just wash one dish and say, I'm done the dishes. No, you've got to keep washing the dishes until there's no more dirty dishes. Making a name card for each guest when you've got attending a party. You know, when you're having a wedding, your thank you card for each of the people who attended the wedding. There's all these patterns where we're repeating a similar action over and over and over again. And when we're writing code and we have something we need to do over and over, we use loops. And that's our way of repeating a task. So we're going to have a little fun. I'm going to use a well-known, actually, tool. It's called Turtle, which is something we can use inside Python show you how we can use loops to make our code a little easier and to repeat events. So we're going to use loops, in this case, to do some drawing. So I'm going to actually start off by doing a little demo and introducing you to Turtle. So I'm going to go into Visual Studio. If you weren't here yesterday, we're using Visual Studio and Python tools with Visual Studio to do our demonstrations. You can find the installation instructions in that GitHub location. We also have that link up inside the Q&A window if you haven't got it. So
I'll throw it back up there right now.
Good idea. That'd be great. Now, so if I want to use Turtle, Turtle isn't a library, so I have to say, start off by importing the Turtle module. And by doing that, what I'm doing is I'm simply telling Visual Studio that, hey, there's some logic inside that Turtle module that I want to be able to use. And Turtle is, said it's used in other programming languages as well. Turtle is a little turtle who moves around the screen and draws lines.
And for those of you who may remember back to, you know, many, many, many years ago, this was actually a very common way, and it still is, a common way to teach kids programming. Because what's nice about it is you get all those core concepts about doing things like loops, issuing commands, and it's just kind of fun watching, oh, yeah, cool, I saw a little drawing on my screen. So I still get a charge out of it.
It's
29.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, you're 29.
That's 29.
Right. So once we've imported Turtle, then we can call some of the methods inside Turtle to do different actions. Now, so we call the Turtle object, and we tell it we want it to move forward. Now, there is something quirky. I'm not sure what it is. I think my IntelliSense library is out of date. So right, you'll notice when I hit the period after typing Turtle, there's a list of methods that pop up. And unfortunately, with Turtle, it doesn't list the methods I actually want to be calling. I'm not sure what's going on with that. So you'll see me just typing in the methods I want to call, and every now and then it goes and selects one that isn't what I wanted. So I'm just going to say, let's tell Turtle to move forward 100. Now, when I execute this code, you'll see basically a line that gets drawn that's 100 pixels long. So it draws a 100 length line. And I can go, and then I can tell Turtle to move to the right.
To the right.
And I can tell it to turn 90 degrees. And then maybe I tell Turtle to move forward 100 again. And again, my apologies. I'm not sure. I think my IntelliSense database is a little out of date. So it keeps thinking I want to select a different method every time I type forward. So now you'll see it draws a line.
I like watching it actually draw.
Actually like watching the motion. And then it goes down and draws another line. So with Turtle, we can go ahead and draw different things on the screen. So if you ever had, there was a toy I used to have as a kid. It was called an Etch-a-Sketch. And it was this little red thing with a little dial. And you would turn it and draw little lines on the screen. I think of Turtle as like Python's Etch-a-Sketch. That's actually how I think.
Okay, I like it.
So we have these awesome little tools that allow us to draw things on the screen. So we're going to be using Turtle in this module to have a little fun and also to introduce the concept of loops. So what I've done is I've drawn a line using Turtle. And if you take a look, there's other things you can do. You can change the color of the pen if you like as well. If you call the color function, you can actually set the pen color to green or blue or red and all kinds of different colors. So if I go here and maybe after I turn the corner, I say turtle.color is red. And once again, the IntelliSense in this case is actually messing me up and trying to change the method on me. Change the color to red. And now you can actually see that the second line that was drawn was actually drawn as a red line. So I can change the colors of the pen, I can move the pen in different directions and draw my object. So that just sort of shows you what Turtle itself can do. Now, I just did some drawing with Turtle, so let me get into a few other commands you might want to play with. If you want to explore Turtle, have a little fun with it. You can rotate to the right, rotate to the left. That's how you make it turn corners to make things like squares, triangles, and so on. You can change the pen color by calling the color function. You can tell it to move forward. You can tell it to move backward. There are more methods than that. If you want, go do a Bing search on Python Turtle functions, and you can get a list of all the different functions. You can do things like lift the pen up and put the pen down so you can't actually get gaps between the lines. Mm-hmm. You can do a stamp to make a little, sort of capture of a little turtle shape at different points on your object. So there's some other functions as well, but this just gives us enough to play with. So if we wanted Turtle to draw a square, you think about what we'd have to do. So we'd have to tell Turtle to draw a line, turn the pen 90 degrees, draw another line, turn the pen 90 degrees, draw another line, turn 90 degrees, and draw another line up to a start. So we'd basically draw a line, turn, draw a line, turn, draw a line, turn, draw a line, turn. And that should give us a square.
Yep.
Ineffectively, if you actually look at the code we'd get for that on the slide here, what you end up with is you actually get the same two lines of code over and over again. Move forward 100, turn right. Move forward 100, turn 90 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll draw a square beautifully, but what we really end up with is just two lines of code repeating over and over and over again.
And over,
this is a
and over.
Perfect situation for using a loop.
Yep.
Because a loop allows us to say, execute these lines of code however many times we want. And that's going to be much easier to work with than having to write the same code over and over. And we talked a bit about this yesterday in terms of good programming practice. It's not a lot of work to copy and paste those two lines of code and move them down the screen. You just go copy, paste, 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 paste.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere down the road, I guarantee you, someone's going to say, could you make a triangle instead of a square? Could you make an octagon instead of a square? So suddenly you now need to loop to run 8 times instead of 4 times. And now the angle's got to be different because your angles aren't going to be the same for a triangle as they would be for a square. And if you don't remember to make the change in every line of, in everywhere where you specify the angle, then the code's not going to work properly. So one of the reasons we don't want to just copy and paste the same code and execute the same two lines of code 4 times the way I have it on the slide here is because if we had to make a change later, that's more places we have to go make the change. We might forget to make it in one place, and now we've just screwed up our code.
Exactly. So, I mean, we keep talking about being lazy developers, but just doing that copy and paste isn't being a good lazy developer, because in the long run, you're just making more work for yourself when you have to go back and change something, because now you have to go back and change it in a lot of places.
That's right. All right, so what we're going to do then is we're going to use a for loop to do the same thing. So if we take a look at the slide, I want to take you through the syntax of the for loop. It's fairly intuitive when you look at it. You've still imported the Turtle library. I'm still using Turtle and telling Turtle to move forward 100. So this line of code hasn't changed. This line of code hasn't changed. And this line of code hasn't changed. So we're still importing the Turtle module, telling the Turtle to move forward 100, and telling the Turtle to turn right 90 degrees.
So we basically have the exact same code that we saw already.
Yes.
But now what we're going to do is we're just going to tell it, hey, I want you to do this.
Four times. Exactly. So the code we haven't looked at yet is the code that's telling it execute these two lines here 4 times. So the way we do that is we use the for loop. The for loop is specifically a loop which allows you to specify a fixed number of times. If you know how many times you want that loop to execute, a for loop works perfectly. So if you take a look at the code, you'll notice I say 4 steps in range 4. So that number 4 is telling my loop how many times I want it to execute. The rest is really just syntax. You have to say 4 something in and then specify number. So those are the only thing you're going to change is the number here.
Mm-hmm.
You get to choose that number. The word range, that's a keyword. You're not going to change that.
Okay.
You always have a semicolon. Yesterday we saw after if statements you need a semicolon.
Colon.
Thank you. After for loops you need a colon. Just like yesterday we saw after if statements you need a colon.
Yep.
You have to indent the code that is going to be repeated. We saw that in if statements yesterday, mm-hmm. that it was a way, indenting is a way for us to tell Python, these commands are part of that if statement, or these commands are part of that for loop. So this is the code that will be repeated.
Right. And so again, you know, very subtle, and a lot of people pointed that out when we talked about the if statements. But again, it is something that you want to get yourself into a habit of. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and if we go back to Susan's slide, if I can point out one other very big thing. Susan did something really, really, really good here. And I want to commend Susan for this. So you get the gold star today, Susan. Congratulations.
Are you talking about this word here?
I'm talking about that word
there. Because I haven't explained it yet. Well, let me explain it, and then I'll let you comment right after I explain it.
Because I want to give you a gold star.
Okay, I appreciate that. So far, really, the syntax, there's nothing you need to think about. It's just syntax. You say for something in range, you specify the number, which is how many times you want to execute, and you have to specify this value here. Basically, this is a variable name that's going to keep track of how many times you've gone through the loop. You can call it anything you want. I just chose to call it steps.
Mm-hmm.
Q Christopher.
So one of the big things about steps is that steps there is a variable. So if Susan wanted, she could have called that wibble. She could have called that
X.
Or
I.
It's so painful.
Yeah.
The thing about single-letter variables is that they don't mean anything. That if I look at a block of code and I see the letter I, what does that mean? I have no idea. But if we take a look at a block of code and I see the word steps, I know what we're talking about. We're talking about steps. So even if you're not using the variable, still give it a good name. If you ever have the opportunity to name something, give it a good name. That if you have kids or if you have pets, you don't name them A, B, C, D. You give them meaningful names. It's the exact same concept here. Give it a meaningful name. Okay, rant over.
Okay.
You get your gold star.
We get to go back to slides now?
Yes.
All right.
Now
so
I can read.
Back to slides. Awesome. That's great. So yeah, so that's that variable steps. If you look at the slide here, he's talking about that variable steps right here. You can call that X, you can call that, as you said, Wibble, you can call it Bob. But yeah, having a meaningful variable name, you'll see I typically use the word steps because I sort of use that as I think of myself as stepping through the loop. And every time I step through the loop, I'm keeping track of how many times I have stepped through the loop. So that variable steps, the first time I go through the loop, it'll be equal to zero. Zero. The second time through the loop, it'll be one. The next time through the loop, it'll be two. Because programming in Python, we always start counting from zero. So first time is zero, second time is one, and so on.
Yep.
All right, so let's go back to the slide. Now we've taken a look at the syntax. And so you can see, we specify the number of times to execute the code in the loop. You have to indent the code you want repeated. And if you change the range value here, so here I've changed it to 3, so that means my loop is only going to execute 3 times. So if I was to execute this code, I end up with an incomplete square because it only drew 3 lines on the screen. So you can see how changing the range changes the number of times the code is repeated. And it's also important to recognize that only the indented code is repeated, right? So these two commands are repeated. So I've got a loop. It's executing 4 times. That's a significant number there I have to really worry about when I'm running for loops. The rest is just syntax. You'll look it up when you need to. I specify to execute 4 times. So 4 times, it's going to move 100, turn 90 degrees. So it's going to draw a square. And then afterwards, I tell it to change the pen color to red and go forward 200. So what this is going to do, though, this isn't indented code. So it's going to draw a square. And then when the pen gets back to start, it's going to go off and draw a red line. So if I execute this code, what you end up with is a square and then this red line going across the top. So you can see that the red line did not execute 4 times. It didn't draw a square, a red square that was bigger.
And it's all about that tabbing. So if you would tab that in, that also would have executed 4 times.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's not indented, so it's not part of a loop. It's not repeated.
Perfect.
So I'm just going to take the code I had here, and I'm going to just demonstrate that actual for loop here, and I'm just going to say 4 steps, and just to prove it, for weird name in range, just to prove you really can use any name you want here in range 4, because I want to execute this 4 times, and now I'm going to have to indent my code.
With tabs.
With tabs, yeah, using the tab key there, and now when I execute my code, I can see it draw my little square.
I just love watching that on
it's
the screen.
Cute. Yep. And then if I specify that after I'm done, I want turtle to move forward. It's so annoying the way it does it.
You can
it
hit
awesome.
Escape.
Escape will work for that?
Yeah.
Ah, there we go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Forward, let's say 200. And again, I'm going to change that pen color as well. I should do that before I move forward. There was no point in changing the pen color afterwards. Turtle.color. Yeah. To be red or green or whatever color I like. And you will see, just like I showed on the slide, that at the end of my loop, it then goes off and draws that longer line that's colored in red. If I just indented that code, then suddenly these commands will be executed 4 times as well because they're indented. They're now part of that loop. So now, oh, look at that. Woo-wee. Oh, you know what I did, of course.
Yeah.
Within
you
the loop.
It as part of it. Yeah,
that's really funny. I hadn't even thought about it. Because what I did is I said, move forward, then turn right, then change the color to red, and move forward again. And do that 4 times. So it caused a little unexpected result there in terms of how it drew it. But you can see, actually the end result in terms of it, it does actually just draw a really big square for me.
Yep, it did exactly what you told it to do. Don't you hate it when that happens? Yeah. Does exactly what you tell it to
do. Computers only do what we tell them to do.
Yes.
It is frustrating sometimes, because sometimes we want them to do what we want them to do, not what we told them to do.
Yep. By the way, can we switch back to Susan's code here real quick? Just because I want to highlight one little thing that came up in the chat. And this is one of those things where And this is true universally, so I guess it's kind of good that we all learn it now, which is sometimes the methods, the properties don't always behave the way that you would expect, that somebody was expecting that color would be a property rather than a method, which I can certainly understand. But yeah, you'll notice that color is a method there, meaning that you're going to say color, and then in parentheses, you've got red there.
Yeah, you're actually calling turtle, you're calling a function called color, which changes the pen color to red. But
exactly.
Absolutely, the person who designed turtle could have designed that as a property instead of a function if they had chose to. It's just a choice the person who wrote the code for turtle made.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And by the way, method and function, those two terms are essentially synonymous. So,
yeah, they're generally interchangeable.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Cool.
All right, let's go back to our slides. Okay, so now, Christopher,
one
of the things we've talked about is that as we write code, we are going to make mistakes.
Uh-huh.
So I have a slide here, and there's three mistakes in this code.
You're doing this to me again.
I'm going to play spot, because one of the things you have to learn how to do is find mistakes in your code. So can you see three mistakes in
this
code?
Well, I see improt.
Improt, yes, you're right. I have made a type mistake. It's import turtle, not improt turtle. I'm putting Christopher on the spot. He hasn't had a chance to look at this before.
I'm seeing the second, but I want to talk about that one at the end.
Sure.
Because that one's a little bit different. Four steps in range four. You need a colon. Thank you.
Yes, that's correct. Good guess, Christopher. Yes, we're missing a colon after
a colon
the range
there.
Four.
Now, the reason that I was kind of holding off on that last one, so you've got, you know, improt turtle, so obviously that's a typo.
That should be import.
And that's going to give you a syntax error. So that's going to, Visual Studio will typically tell you right away, hey, you've got a problem here, or when you run the code, it will bomb out on you. With steps, Visual Studio will give you, and this is the technical term, red squigglies to tell you, hey, you've got that wrong. The last mistake that you've got is turtle 90, right 90.
I probably meant to have that indented,
exactly.
Didn't I? Because I'm trying to draw my square again.
And that's one of those, should be indented. A lot of people caught that, which is perfect.
Yep, good catch.
The thing is that's what developers call logic error, meaning that your code is going to execute correctly. It's not going to give you an error message, but it's not going to do what you want it to do, which makes it one of the hardest bugs to try to debug.
Why don't we execute that exact mistake?
Yeah, we can see it.
And you can see what would happen if I ran the code.
Yep.
So, yeah, absolutely. You know, if I left off that colon, then, you know, I get the little red squiggly, as you said. And, yes, that is what we call it, the red squiggly.
Yep.
Or a syntax error or a compilation error. We'll use those terms. But if I forget to indent the turning right, Visual Studio goes, this is valid code. You can do this if you want. But then when I run it, I end up with a really big, long line. And I'm like, that's not what I was trying to draw.
And if we actually did, you know, go, you know, 8 billion steps off the page, or I guess 400
If I made
steps
this only 10 wide, you could see it.
Exactly. Yeah, what you could see at the very end there is you'll notice at the very end that the cursor did, in fact, turn that 90 degrees to the right.
Yes.
So it did, you know,
it
run
worked.
The code. It did exactly what you told it to do.
But not what I wanted it to do.
Exactly.
Yes. So that is the challenge, is you have to find both the mistakes. Some of the mistakes Visual Studio will help you find. Some of the mistakes Visual Studio can't help you, because what you wrote is syntactically valid. It just doesn't do what you want the code to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right. So, yes, you have successfully found all the mistakes. Well done to those of you in the audience as well who pointed them out in the Q&A.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep. And there's still actually a lot of conversation around that tab. And that is something that's relatively unique. I'm sure there are other places where you will see that. But again, you know, yes, it's subtle. I'm with you on that. But it's a good practice. It's something you would do anyway, even if you did have curly braces or end statements or the like.
Yeah, because some other programming languages, instead of using that indenting, there has to be a way. If you think about it, if you were designing a programming language, you need a way to say which commands should be repeated. You have to have a way of doing that.
Yep.
Some programming languages will require to use certain braces, and you do an opening and close brace around the commands that are going to be repeated. Some programming languages have effectively an end loop command that indicates the loop starts here, loop ends here.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, in all those programming languages, as a convention, most of us always indent the code that's inside the loop anyway, whether we have brackets showing beginning and end or an end loop word indicating the end of a loop in the beginning.
It just makes it more readable.
It does. We tend to indent the code anyway because it's more readable. So in a way, Python's letting us be lazy by not having to type a word like end loop or having to add curly braces. We were indenting it anyway, so it was easier to see. When I look at it, I instantly go, oh, that's the code in the loop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here we go back to being lazy developers again. You'll notice a theme.
Yes. I encourage being a lazy coder in the sense of it's being an efficient coder. That's what
yes.
I like to think.
Lazy perfectionism, to bring out the little phrase that we learned yesterday from one of our attendees.
That's
so
right.
I don't know if he's on board yet this morning, but yeah.
So. All right. So now let's take a look at nested loops, because it is also possible to put one loop inside another. So you can actually have a lot of fun, especially in this drawing tool with Turtle. When you start nesting loops, you can have a lot of fun. So if you think about it, so what I've got is I've got my for loop, which is repeating four times. And then inside the for loop, this is all nicely indented, but look what else I have indented in the for loop. I have another for loop, and it's going to, this for loop has to execute four times because it's indented. So this is going to be, said, so this will all be done four times.
Yep.
And then four times, I have a loop that will execute four times. That draws a slightly smaller line and turns.
What's going to happen is you have two loops. So you've got that outer loop. So that's going to execute four times. And then each time that it does that, it's going to execute that inner loop four times.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if you look at that inside loop, all right, challenge, you know, think about it. Those in the QA, how many times is this code going to execute?
There's math again this morning.
Yes, it's math this morning. Is it going to execute four times? Yeah. 8 times, 12 times, 44 times. You got any guesses in the QA window yet, Chris?
Not yet.
Might be a little lag. Sometimes there's a little lag.
There's a little bit of a lag
when we're talking
there.
And when you get a chance to see what we're saying.
But
so the answer is,
a couple of people saying 4. The answer's actually going to wind up being
16
there we
times.
Go. Yeah, we got a, and actually, yeah, somebody called it out specifically. It'll run 4 times 4. A couple of people actually called it out.
Yes, 4 times 4.
That's really
four.
The best way to think
that
about it.
That is a good
yeah,
way.
4
yeah.
times 4. Because you've got the outer loop. Inside of that is that inner loop. So the outer loop is going to run 4. The inner loop contains another loop. So it's going to be, while we're doing this, 1, 2, 3, 4. While we're doing this, 1, 2, 3, 4. So 4 times 4 is 16.
Yeah, well done.
Again, there's math this morning.
Yeah. What's really fun, though, is I love the output you end up with. If you draw it, you end up with little squares inside a big square.
You know, it's really kind of funny watching the lag now kick in because, you know, it was a little bit of time and no answers.
And now
answers.
Everybody's
now
got it.
See the Q&A. It's
everybody's
just,
got
16.
It. You guys rocked it. You knew the answer. I knew you had the answer. It's awesome.
16 will be the number of the day.
Now, I had a little fun. When I was playing around and I started doing nesting loops inside Turtle, I started going, well, what if I do a different shape instead of nested loops? And I had fun. So then I hear now I've got a loop. And the outside loop executes 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And inside, again, I've got a nested loop. And the inside loop executes 5 times.
So 5 times 5, so 25.
Right. So this code is going to execute 5 times.
So that's going to give me a pentagon.
A pentagon, correct. And then this code is going to execute 5 times 5, which is going, 5 times 5 times.
Yep.
Because you guys figured that out. And that's so it's going to execute 25 times.
Right.
Now, what's interesting, of course, it's doing this along the way. And now you'll notice I'm still moving forward 100, but I'm turning right. My angle that I'm changing is 360 divided by 5. If you want to draw equilateral shape, is that what you call it when everything's the same size of every side?
Oh, now we're going with geometry.
I know, geometry is tough.
Geometry is actually one of my worst subjects.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but if you want to draw a triangle, the angle of a triangle that's going to have three sides that are equal size is 360 degrees divided by 3. Do you want to draw a perfect square, then the angle of each corner is 360 divided by 4 because it's got 4 sides. If you want to draw a pentagon and have exactly the right angle and everything the same side, the angle is 360 divided by 5. So if you have a 6-sided object, it would be, and you needed to the angle would be 360 divided by, Christopher, fill in the blank.
I wanted 6?
Yes, 6
oh,
is correct.
6.
6 is correct. Now, the fun thing is, when
I was answering Q&A questions.
I know you were.
By the way, I do want to mention, because, we actually now have 3 people that are helping with the Q&A. It's Susan, myself, and...
And Sonel. Thank you, Sonel.
Yes.
Appreciated.
So we're doing our absolute best to try and respond to as many questions as we can. But if, you know, somebody winds up, you know, kind of falling through, there's only 2 of us.
Yeah,
we're doing our best.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So do be patient if we take a little while to answer questions.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, if you actually go back to the slide here and you look at the shape that's been drawn, it's neat because when the pentagons overlap, you get this funky star shape that ends up appearing on the screen. So you can have a lot of fun when you start playing with the drawing and the nested loops.
Exactly. Yep.
So if we just demonstrate that, I'm going to go ahead and add another nested loop here for steps in range 4. So let's do that nested square. And we ask Turtle to move forward 100. Let's make it smaller. So we're going to make little squares inside the big square. And we're just going to take that command, paste it there, indent it nicely. And now I have one loop nested inside the other. And if I execute, you can actually see it. Whoa, that's not quite what I meant to do. Oh, actually, it is, right? That's kind of neat.
Yeah, that is.
So you can see the kind of fun little patterns and things you can end up drawing. Just depends on the length of the square you end up drawing inside, how it looks.
Exactly.
So I had some fun with that because I forgot I'd drawn a little square. Originally, it was 100 size square.
Yeah.
So you can have some fun playing around with this. Now, I am going to take 1 minute just to sort of illustrate. I'm going to put a breakpoint here, and I'm going to execute my code. And the reason I'm going to do this is because I want you to sort of see, here I am going in. Oh, frame not, that's getting, oh, it doesn't, it's a little messed up here. Stack frame was not found loading. That's a neat message. Execute, please. Okay, it's.
Maybe stop.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't think it likes me debugging when I'm in the middle of drawing things. I think that's throwing it off. But it will literally, it'll execute this code once, enter this loop, execute this loop 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Then go back here, execute this a second time, enter this loop, execute 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Go back up to the top, execute this a third time, execute the inside loop 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Go back up here, it'll be the fourth time, execute it, then execute this loop 1, 2, 3, 4 times. So that's actually the way the code flows when it's actually executing. All right, now, one of the things we did look at yesterday was the power of using variables inside your code. And one of the great things about using a variable, instead of the repeating the same value over and over in your code, is it means if you need to change a value later, it'll be faster. So what I've done here is, in my code, I've created a variable called number of sides of my object. Because I was telling you, you can calculate the angle to draw a perfect shape by just saying the angle you need is 360 degrees divided by number of sides you want the shape to have.
Yep.
So by doing this, I can just say, hey, you know what? If I want a six-sided object, execute the loop 6 times. But instead of putting the number 6, I'm saying, just read the number of sides on the object from my variable. And then when I tell it how many degrees I want it to turn, I say it's 360 degrees divided by number of sides.
Yep.
Now, what's neat about this is if I go and do this in my code, number sides equals, and I'll start off with 4. So initially, it's going to be exactly the same square that I was drawing before, number sides. And the I'm changing the angle is going to be 360 divided by number of sides. And if you do the math, 360 divided by 4 is 90. So it should still be a 90-degree turn.
Carry the 1. Yes.
Got the math? My math's good?
Yep.
You've had your coffee this morning. Well done, Christopher. And now when I run, we get exactly the same drawing we did before. So, you know, initially you look at it and go, this is just a little more code. Why would you bother doing it this way? And I'm actually going to make this a little bigger because I think the other objects will look nicer. So I'm just going to redraw it with a bigger outside square. Mm-hmm. So it looks a little more like this. So you can see the little square is being drawn inside the big square. But now, if I want to make it a pentagon, I just change that to a 5. One change, and suddenly I have a whole new object. Oh, did I forget to change
it? Yeah, you forgot one little update. You'll notice you've got the second one. Yeah, that also needs
to be. I told it the inside loop needs to execute.
Although, you know, having the string of pentagons is actually kind of cool.
It's fun. It's fun. This is what I was after. There we go. So you can really have a lot of fun playing around with this. And you can see how now this sort of becomes a, you know, what if I make this 20? Who knows, right? What do I end up with then?
And, you know, and yeah, a lot of people are asking about circles. And so kind of there you go. And loops would be a great way to do that. And, you know, one of the things that a couple of people pointed out is, hey, you know what? My kids are going to love this.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a reason why Logo is and
Turtle.
Logo, Turtle. Well, you know.
This is Turtle.
This is Turtle. Well, Logo, Turtle.
Yeah.
Anyway. But there's a big reason why this is used with kids and also with adults is because of the fact that it's fun, it's cute, it's something to play with. And when you're learning, if you're having fun, you're going to learn it that much better.
And you'll practice.
Exactly.
Because you're going to want to play with it. You're going to want to experiment. I love this. It's like Spirograph playing
Exactly.
with this thing.
Ooh, good reference.
Yeah. So anyway, you can see the objects drawing there. So it really is quite fun to play around with it. That's why I love playing with the nested loop.
Yeah.
But notice how said by using a variable, I can now change one line of code and completely change the output. And that's the power of using variables in your code. So we just talked about that.
Yep.
All right. So we've also demonstrated that as well. Now, one of the things I haven't done yet in my code is I've never actually looked at that variable steps. I never actually used it anywhere in my code. I had to declare it as part of a syntax. I have to have these variable steps in my code, but I was never using it. The fact is, that is a variable, and it will actually have a value every time the code executes. The first time you go through the loop, it will have a value of 0. The second time you go through the loop, it will have a value of 1. The third time you go through the loop, it'll have a value of 2. The last time you go through the loop, it'll have a value of 3. The way this works is when steps reaches the value here, it exits the loop. So you can actually reference that variable inside your loop. And there will be times when you want to count. And using a for loop is a great way to count to a particular number. And you can use that to do math and all kinds of neat little things in terms of problem solving. So just remember, in programming, we always count starting from 0. That's really important to remember. It takes a little getting used to. You'll forget it occasionally. Your code won't do what you want. And then you do something. I've actually done this to debug code before when I couldn't figure out what was going on. Sometimes I'd actually print the value of step on the screen, even though I didn't need it. I just print it on the screen so I could see what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's an old coder's trick, to just print a value on the screen while your code is executing so you can see what's going on.
Yep.
We do have a debugger, but sometimes I still fall back on that. All right, so if we go back to the slides, what if you want to count from 1? I mean, there are business situations where sometimes you need to count from 1, not from 0.
Yep.
In that case, you are actually allowed in syntax of Python, instead of just specifying a range of 4, you can specify a start and end. So you can say start counting from 1. So the first time it executes a loop, the value will be 1. The second time, it'll be a value of 2. The third time, it's going to be a value of 3. And now it's done.
So it's up 2.
Right, because when the value equals the range, it stops executing. So the thing to remember is if I write a loop that says run from 1 to 4, it only executes 3 times. So that's the thing you got to remember about that, is when it never reaches the higher number. It usually counts from 0. So a range of 4 would execute 4 times. But when you say, start from 1, then it only executes 3 times. As soon as it reaches a value of 4, it says, I've reached 4. That's the maximum. Time to get out.
And I'm done.
And I'm done, exactly. So that's important to be aware of. Now, there's another neat thing you can do in terms of syntax on for loops, and that is specifying a step or a skip, amount to skip by. What this is going to do is the first time it executes a loop, it's going to be a value of 1, because that's our start value we specified here.
Yep.
The second time, it's actually going to have a value of 3, because we specified this skip step of 2. So basically, it said jump by 2. The third time it executes, it'll have a value of 5 because we told it to jump by 2. The next time, value of 7 because, again, we told it to jump by 2. The next time, it'll have a value of 9 because it jumps by 2. When it reaches a value of 11, it's going to say, wait a second, 11, that's higher than 10. If it reaches 10 or 11, it would never execute with a value of 10 or 11 because we've said get out when you reach to 10. And so this one actually only ends up executing, 5 times. But it's interesting when you start playing with steps, and if you specify minimums and maximums, you have to be very careful. You might accidentally write a loop that executes 1 too few times or 1 too many times.
Yep.
I'm drawing it out on the screen. I'm literally writing out the numbers. I do that on paper when I'm trying to figure out my loops. I have sat there with a piece of paper beside me going, wait a second. The first time it does a loop, it's going to be a 1. And the second time, it's going to be a 3. And I literally write it out on paper so that I can count. And then I go back and count and go, I needed it to execute 6 times. I need to change the value.
Yep.
So that is a perfectly valid practice. Write it out on paper. And then you can see what your code's going to do. If you're lucky, you'll get it right the first time. But quite often, it's a common coding mistake to just get it off by 1.
Yep.
Test, test, test. So you think it's running 4 times, run it, make sure it's running 4 times.
Exactly.
So if we go back to the slides, and now this is a really cool, I love this trick in Python. This is really interesting. Now, however, I want to point out it's a little different syntax here. There's a word missing in this command. The word range is missing. I've written a for loop, but I didn't say the word range.
Okay.
And the other thing is, my brackets changed. I was using the rounded parentheses before. Now I have square braces or square brackets. So two big changes in syntax here to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm specifying a series of values. What I'm doing now is I'm actually telling my for loop exactly what values to use when it runs through the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So I can actually tell the for loop, the first time you go through the loop, use this value. Second time you go through the loop, use this value. Third time you go through the loop, use this value.
So it's sort of like what other languages might call a for each loop.
Yes,
so if you were in C Sharp or VB, like a for each, because what you're saying is the first time through, it's going to be one. The second time through, it's going to be two. Or you could, of course, have changed the numbers.
Those numbers could be 72, 15, 7, and 8.
16. Don't forget 16, the number of the day.
Sure. So if we go back to the slide, the first time it goes for a loop, it takes the first value in the list. And the value of steps is going to be one.
Mm-hmm.
Second time through the loop, it takes a second value in the list. That's going to return, so steps will be two.
Yep.
Third time through the list, takes the third value. That would return a three.
Yep.
Now, and instead, this number here could be 44. That's fine. And if it was 44, it would then steps would be 44. I happen to enter four. And the last time through the loop, it is five. Now, in this case, yes, it will execute for that last value because you're telling execute once for each value I'm providing. But just, I guarantee you, the first time you do this, you're going to accidentally type the word range or you're going to use the wrong brackets and you're going to get syntax errors. So just look it up when you need to, but it's a really cool feature and very useful.
Yep.
So that's the output we get. Now, what I really like about this is the way you can play with things like, I said, so viz that reminder. You don't have to use numbers.
No,
you can say any value at all. You want the loop to execute, and here's the value to put into that variable steps.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back to the slide again. This time, I said my loop is going to have a value of red. Mm-hmm. So the first time the code executes, the value will be red. The second time the code executes, the value of steps will be blue. Mm-hmm. The third time the loop executes, it will have a value of green. And the fourth time it executes, the value of the variable steps will be black. So what I'm doing is I'm drawing an object, I'm changing the pen color each time through, so I end up with a multicolor square.
Awesome. So a couple of things that I'd love to mention here. Real quick, number one on your slide, and I love the fact that you've been consistent with steps, but it's definitely worth calling out here that you could have used whatever name it is that you wanted.
Sure.
So you could have maybe used color instead.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Hang on. We can do the little eraser thing here.
I won't let you erase
that. Okay, hang on. We'll have to...
You'd have to bail out of the slide there.
Okay, hang on. No, we'll get a pen here, and we're just going to scribble that out.
There you go. I love it.
Color. But I'm a Canadian, so I'm spelling it with a U.
And then, put that down.
Scribble that there,
well.
And this is now going to be C-O. That's a really good point. That's a much better name for the variable in this scenario, because in this time, when I'm going through the loop, the variable I'm setting is really holding a color.
So exactly.
That's a much better name.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I'd like to point out real quickly, because there's been a few questions about this in the chat window, about putting together that list of numbers that you had, and if you were using 1 through 5, could you have done like 1 dot 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 5, or could you have done 1 dash 5?
Oh, no. Unfortunately, Python doesn't support that syntax. You do have to, if you want to count from 1 to 5, use the syntax we had earlier. If we go back to my slide, if you want to go from 1 to 5, use the in range syntax.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only catch would be with range, of course, is if you wanted to display the number 5, you'd have to say 1, 6.
That's right.
Exactly, because always remember that it's going to be up to, but not including that number.
Yeah.
So you would have to use 1, 6 if you wanted that 1 to 5 range.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Some great questions coming up there. So just to sort of show that sort of neat little example, if I'm just going to comment out this code using the great Control K, Control C command to turn that into comments, and I'm just going to write a little for color in red, green, blue, and black. And in that loop, oops, I forgot my colon. And then I'm simply going to tell Turtle to change the color to the color value that I read from the loop. And then I'm going to tell Turtle to draw a line, move forward 100. And then I'm going to ask Turtle to turn. Oh, what the heck? Let's go left, just because we can. because I can turn left. No, there, no Zoolander references? I was waiting for that.
Oh, no, I was going to say jump to the left.
Okay, yeah, that would work too. All right, so I execute my code, and the first time through, the color should be red, so we should see a red line, then a green line, then a blue line, then a black line, if I did this correctly. Fingers crossed. There we go.
There it is. Just like that.
So, really said you can have a lot of fun with this. Okay. You can actually mix up different data types when you are specifying explicit values. So in this case, I'm saying, you know, red, blue, green, black, and 8.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a little problem with this. If I execute this code, the problem I'm going to have is when I say change the color of the pen to 8, Turtle's going to be really confused and go, what color is 8? So 8 is not a valid color, and so this would actually crash my code. So you do need to be very careful if you're trying to mix data types. It's not generally recommended. It's valid code, but it might crash your code because maybe when you use the variable later, it doesn't work. If you actually go back to the code, let me look at the slide here. You can see it is possible. I was doing a print statement, it would work, but not when I'm trying to change a color. So your challenge, now that you've had a chance to play around
with this. Should you choose to accept it?
I want you to have Turtle draw an octagon, right? So there's just a reminder here of how to calculate the angle for an octagon. As an extra bonus or extra credit, try to rewrite it so the user can type in the how many sides they want the object to have and draw whatever they ask.
And one little thing that's worth highlighting there, especially for people who weren't around yesterday, that they could use input to obviously collect that piece of information, but the catch is that input's only going to send in a string, so you need to convert that. So
you're going to need to convert that string into a number before you try to count how many sides the object has. So you're going to have to, if you get to the extra credit, you're going to have to deal with data type conversions as well.
Yep, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
And there's an even double extra credit, which is add a nested loop inside to make the little one inside the big one.
Exactly. Yep.
So have some fun with that. And we'll be back in 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, we'll be back in 10 minutes. And the next module will be looping when we don't know the number of times that we're going to loop.
Yeah. So we're going to look at some different types of loops for different scenarios.
Yeah.
See you shortly.
We'll see you in 10.